There is approximately, and this could be for the superintendent, there's approximately a bond that's still sitting there of $7.9 million for, I believe, school renovations. What is the intent of that? But let me rephrase. There are underutilized schools in the city right now. Does the administration have any plans for consolidating any of those underutilized schools before any of that $7.9 million is used to renovate or repair buildings that we're going to close?
In the most recent bond application for the high schools, the Warwick School Department stated that we would not be closing any schools at this time. However, this summer we are initiating a redistricting committee. With the redistricting, we will be looking at enrollment data surrounding all of our schools. And after reflecting upon the data, we'll be making decisions on future programming at schools. But the redistricting process will dictate where we are with programming at each school, and that'll enable us to make further decisions as we look at our plan for our physical plants that we're looking at over the next 5 and 10 years. That process will start this summer.
So I would assume that there has been some discussion about what particular schools could possibly be closed. Has there been any guesstimate of a number of savings that would result between closing the schools and obviously with appropriate staff reduction in closing those schools?
Sure. There has been an awful lot on social media about schools and closing schools. At this point, I'd like to look at the redistricting data once it's completed, and then come back to you with some answers to this question. I don't want to shoot from the hip and give you misinformation or overstate or overpromise anything. I want to rely on the data that's presented this August.
Okay. And the school department is asking us for approximately $3.8 million. Is that correct?
Say that again.
The school department is asking us
the 2.68% increase, yes.
What is it, please?
2.68% increase.
Okay. And that amount, as you know, takes a significant cut of what our maximum tax increases can be. I'm going to move on to some of the financial items here. So your item 51115, salaries, substitutes, $2 million. The substitute teachers, I believe, has a direct correlation to the 90 sick days that teachers have or could have. What I don't see in here is what the dollar amount is for those 90 sick days. If every teacher, obviously it's a pie in the sky thing, but it's not impossible. If every teacher took 90 sick days, what would that number be?
A significant number. A very significant number. That would bring us well above. So we actually, for this fiscal year, are trending in a very good direction for our substitute line item. Hence the reason why we are recommending bringing that budget line item down from 2.4 down to 2 million. Mm-hmm. We're trending in the right way.
I know it disturbs people when I talk about the 90 sick days, but it needs to be talked about. And it needs to be have serious consideration, because my understanding is the reason for the 90 sick days is because the teachers don't get TDI. I've put that up.
Correct.
Correct? Okay. So to me, it would make a lot of sense, and this was discussed about a year ago this past January with members of the school committee and the school department, of paying the cost of the TDI, reducing the 96 days down to 10, 15. And if that were to occur, what type of savings would that show?
I'm going to say probably 1.5 million to 2 million.
Correct.
The other piece is that you also have another bargaining unit where they actually pay into it. So there'll be that union would probably come forward as well and say, you're paying for that union, therefore we want you to pay for ours as well. Mm-hmm. So
I understand the teachers' concerns about not having TDI, and I actually concur with them on that. To me, this is a rather simple business decision that should have been made a long time ago. On teacher administrative pension, you have a line item of $14,955, and you also have your code 522004, private pension payment defined benefit. What is that?
That is the WISE pension.
Okay. So that's in addition to WTU?
Correct.
Got it.
Correct.
And what is teacher administrative pension?
That is the two portions of the teacher pension are the ERSRI portion and then the TIAA. And what happens is the state for the TIAA portion reimburses us every quarter. So we submit for reimbursement, and depending upon the number of years each employee has, we get reimbursed a certain percentage of that. So that $500,000 that's in that line, that's just the net. So that's after, it's probably close to a million. So
it's interesting to me that you just mentioned the word net again. I had quite a discussion last night about net.
No, no more net. Gross.
Anyhow,
Councilman,
you're
out of time, but if you want, you can ask that someone motion to add time.
Sure. Request a motion for an additional 5 minutes.
If I can get my mic to work, motion to grant Councilman Lattice an additional 5 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. Down below, well, let me back up. So in here is dental. So you have dental, obviously, as a benefit. But down in line item 53412, there's another item that says dentist in the amount of $33,000. Why is that separate from?
So the 52,000 series is a benefit per the UCOA account string coding that we have. 53,000 is a contracted service. So that line for the dentist, that's the dentist that we pay who comes in, and we have to provide the mandated screenings for all the schools.
These are dentists that come into the school to do what?
Screenings.
Screening.
We are required by state law to do screenings of, I forget the ages, the elementary schools.
Of only. The children or of the teachers?
The children. The children.
Of the, serious question. Of the students?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct, yep.
Councilman, if I may interject briefly.
Sorry?
If I may make a very quick statement to
sure.
clarify, I'd just like to point out for the audience that perhaps the reason for that question and why it wasn't immediately obvious is because the 53,000 series is under the header of Personnel Services Employee Benefits. So it's not clear, unless one delves into it and asks a question, is this a service for the employee, as is typical under that header, or is this a service for the students? so as to clarify. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman. I would point out that there's probably several hundred code items here that admittedly I'm not familiar with, and that's why we're here tonight, so I can ask the questions. Transportation costs, that obviously is a major number. So what has the school department considered or is looking into to perhaps shift gears on transportation costs?
So a lot of that has to do with the bell times. You know, we've, over the course of the years when the district has closed schools, one thing that we've never really looked at is changing the bell times. And so right now we have a three-tier system of how the buses run. We are taking a look at that. As I said, the audit that RIDE helped do for us is going to hopefully provide us some really good information, not only on the number of riders, but looking at the map of the city and helping us figure out if there are some cost efficiencies on the runs.
And I believe that the teachers, they do not get lifetime health care when they retire, correct?
They do not.
Right. So
up to the age of 65, and then they're shut off.
Rightfully so. On the school department side, you have the same financial challenges that we have on the city side, and that's called healthcare, pensions, and legacy costs. On the city side, it's even more challenging because we still sit here with lifetime healthcare on retirees. I think people are starting to realize now that unless we make those tough, difficult decisions and increase the co-pays on healthcare, increase the caps on prescription drugs, eliminate lifetime healthcare for new hires when they retire. And I reiterate, new hires when they retire, because I've been criticized saying, oh, you can't touch the contract. I'm not touching your contract. I'm saying when new hires retire. You are never going to get control on these expenses. Those are the driving forces that are definitely pushing us over the edge. And if everybody's serious about taking on these challenges and dealing with that, then that's where you need to stop. Just my opinion. Thank you, Mr. Enos. Thank you, Superintendent. Thank you, Chairman of the School Committee. And I appreciate everyone being here this evening.
Thank you, Mr. President. Unfortunately, I am going to talk about gross and net. So, actually, I'm going to start with student gross and net first. So, with CTE, Director Tim, Sash, a few questions. So,
Councilman, is your mic working?
I'll put it closer. How's that? I'm good. So the CTE program, you mentioned that we have about 500 enrolled. 100 of them are coming from West Warwick, which we're getting paid for. And we have about 200 students leaving for one reason or another through the CTE Pathways program. Two questions. Are we getting any other of that 500, you claimed the 100 from West Warwick. Any other school systems coming into Warwick?
Yes, there are.
How many students would that account for? Ballpark.
I would have to probably defer to Mr. Enos just to have about 15.
15?
Okay. So 200 goes out, 115 come in. Okay, so negative net. Here's my concern. You made a comment that we're near max at the CTE program. How are we going to resolve that to keep growing that program, to keep people in our school system?
When students say, there's a number of different ways students come into and get experience through CTC. One of them is a ninth grade exploratory. We take about 100 students who spend about a half a year at the CTC for one period a day. They rotate through all the programs. At the end of their stay, they fill out an application and they typically put in a first, second, and third choice. For those students that don't make it into the exploratory, we run open sessions where students come in from the high schools. They kind of like the same idea. They can spend as many days as they want in a program testing it out. Same idea. They do a first, second, and third choice in that. All of our visiting students, we have a rubric for. So we have the instructors score them on that rubric to try to attract the best students. So what we've noticed is the caliber of the students coming through has generally been on the increase. With regards to programs being at near max, we really haven't had to turn students away from the Career Center as a center itself, but there are times when a student wants marine trades and they wind up, you know, and their second choice was an electrical trades program. There is a space issue, obviously, with CTC. You can only safely have so many students in a given area. There's also a staffing requirement. Finding a CTC teacher is probably one of the most challenging positions to find because of the fact that they require industry credentials. And I think we all know the trades right now are exploding outside of the school, so attracting them in. That being said, we did hire a second electrical teacher. Knowing that that program was on a tear for a while where they were maxing out every year going on a wait list. So we have managed to put the students into programs at the CTC. It's not necessarily always the first choice program. Those go to the highest scorers in that program.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is that, yes, we have alternatives, but it's at the margins, not at the bulk. If we want to attract, we want to get a net zero here from the 200 going out, 215 going out, to the 115 coming in, we don't have the space to even take on 85 more students.
We have done the analysis on the students that are leaving the district, and we have done an analysis on the substantially similar piece, the substantially similar law, general law, that gives students the opportunity to leave the district. And currently we have initiated litigation approximately 2.5 months ago on programs that we feel are substantially similar. And we're in the discovery phase at this point. We're still waiting to receive information back from the Rhode Island Department of Education. But we have spent an awful lot of time looking at substantially similar programming, and we have looked at the alignment of our program to the other programs on why students are leaving the district. Unfortunately, time isn't on our side on this matter. I mean, waiting 2.5 months to receive information why something is different seems crazy to me, but I'm not an attorney. I'm not in the field of litigating matters, so I can't really make any further comment on that matter.
Okay, but my question was, let's assume the stars align and we get those students to our program.
Sure.
Can we handle that?
As part of the redistricting that we'll be looking at this summer, we are looking at every single building that the district owns, and we're looking at every single space and its utilization. After looking at the utilization other than through the technology program where we have, and actually looking at physical space within facilities, we can see what we have available for classroom space within the district.
Okay.
So your question is, would we have space? We are looking at everything at this point.
I know you'll do the best you can. I'm just trying to get an idea because we talk about space. and where we have the resources and the need.
I can probably speak a little bit more to that. When the new high schools are completed, as part of that redesign that happened, I was director of the Career Center at that point. We made sure that every program room was larger than the room that was currently there. So nothing is smaller. I don't even believe anything is equal. Everything insured for additional space. So I'm confident that if we had 200 students that decided not to go out of district, that when those schools, you know, were completed, we would be able to accommodate that. That being said, based upon the phone calls I made this summer as one of my first assignments, I did call a neighboring district. I called every parent of Warwick that was going to that particular district without naming them right here. I think everybody in the room would know what that district is. And they all were pretty honest with why they were going. Some are more polite than others, but the general gist of that conversation was, thank you for your phone call. We appreciate it, but we know we don't have to answer your questions. We can go anywhere we want, whether you have an identical program or not. In fact, there are cases, our culinary program just won the nationals. We have potentially a student could leave our program to go play for an opposing district and join their culinary program. Crazy as that sounds, we're on the hook for those dollars.
That wasn't my question, but we'll pass.
I tried to answer it with the new high schools. The new high schools have additional space built in for CTE for those students.
To expand the program.
Correct.
All right, that's what I was trying to get at.
Yep.
Thank you. The next question would be for special ed. So my question is, gross and net, we talk about the fluidity of the student population coming in. What's the math of going out?
Going out in terms of out of district, or you're talking about people leaving the district?
Either leaving the district, leaving the program. So we have the same student migration patterns in general pop. My question is, do we have that same population mix?
No, we've seen a slight uptick in our percentage of students with IEPs. There's any number of reasons for that, but that's nationwide. It's not just Warwick. But in terms of Warwick specific increase in students with IEPs has been the increase in the number of families who have taken in foster children, which I think is a great thing. But what comes along with that is an expense, where you know, just recently someone brought in a student who, due to medical conditions and outside placement, will probably cost us around $200,000 a year for that student. So it kind of goes along that unexpected cost. But yes, our number of percentage of special education has gone up a bit.
Okay.
What it was, what is now.
Yeah.
You want to give me the numbers?
Yep, I can do that. So in terms of school year 23-24, we were at 1629, and then at the end of, or where we are at the end of 25-26 is 1889.
Thank you. I do recognize the increase. Just wondering if the population was similar. I support the idea of the foster parents. I'm actually on a board that encourages foster parenting. So definitely appreciate that. While you're up here, I'm gonna jump to one of my risk questions. Is with our special ed and IEP population and the student teacher or service ratio, is there a risk if we increase that there is a danger of harm to teachers or other staff members or other students?
Are you saying the increase in caseload per teacher?
Yes.
I guess the quick answer would be yes, right? Anytime you're going to increase the number of students any one individual is responsible for, right? that more and more of our special education population has become more of a behavioral concern than it is an academic performance issue. But again, that's state and nationwide. The nature of IEPs have been changing now for probably the past 4 or 5 years, where it's less about can Johnny read his A, B's, and C's, and more about why is Johnny throwing a chair? How is that for an explanation?
Nope. And I just full disclosure, my wife is a teacher. She has IEP classes, and I hear the stories almost every day. So I appreciate the context. Thank you. I'm going to jump to budget. For healthcare costs, we talk about gross versus net. The number that's in the budget is a net number.
Correct.
What is the gross number, and how do we get, what are the counterparts that get us to the net number?
So we've got the health insurance copays that are taken out every week. Well, every week or every payroll. The WISE unions paid every week. Teachers and administrators are paid every 2 weeks. So, but roughly our monthly bill that we have probably runs around 2.3 million, depending upon the month goes up, can go down depending upon who comes in, signs off. But.
Thank you. I'm going to try to keep you up there for 1 second. So, on financial risk, there's a debate on the 90 sick days that's going on. We have a pool of $2 million for the subpay. Is there something contractually that expenses over that $2 million goes into a pool and the teachers pay back into that pool of that amount to get it to the $2 million or whatever that budgeted number is?
There is a pool. The exact process and how it functions, I can provide you with that information. I don't have it with me this evening.
Okay. More, not the process. I'm actually familiar with the process, but the dollars, I'm trying to get to the accounting dollars. So
yeah, and that varies depending upon how many absences there are and things of that nature.
Exactly. Let's just say the cost comes out to be $3 million. We had $2 million in the pot and we paid that $1 million, and correct me if I'm wrong, does that $1 million get distributed based proportionally by the number of days a teacher is out?
I can provide you with that information. I don't want to give you any misinformation this evening, but I believe so it does. Okay. But I'll get you the exact information.
All right. I appreciate that. I'll stay on the contract stuff, so I'll keep the superintendent up. So we talked about the full day versus part-time. And the rotation of every other Friday or every Friday to get their non-teaching in. And then there was some talk about creating a break. And I'm just saying this, so don't shoot me. Within the contract, do the teachers have the ability to not take their free period and get paid for that?
To that question, and is this specific to Welk in terms of a teacher deciding not to take their non-teach and get paid for that?
Exactly.
I believe contractually it's that if the principal has made a specific request for a person not to use that non-teach, then that person should get reimbursed for the time that they've been asked to not take. I believe that's how it works with the contract.
Just wanted to throw another option out there. Teachers may want the extra options there. So actually, I'm going to bring the school chair up. You talked about risk. I want to get a you're a risk guy.
Yes, sir.
I don't like generalities. Can you point out, just list what you view as the potential risk, as well as what type of mitigation do you have? Being a risk manager, you always have a mitigation plan. Can't, or you should.
First plan run.
Yes. All right. So if you can give me that, I think we'll end.
Yeah, well, I brought up the DCYF placements, and I believe firmly children should be able to come to a safe setting. So not shunning that, but a DCYF placement, they do occur throughout the year. We've been working trying to address underfunded or unfunded mandates. They continue to grow. One of the things we were doing to partner with the city of Cranston was, from a mitigation plan perspective, is to have a cutoff period where if a student wants to go to another district, even though we have that program in-house, they should have to declare that they're going to plan to transfer by a certain date. That will help us out with budgeting. However, I don't know where that stands at the State House at this time, hoping that it passes this year. But, I remain optimistic, but I'm not going to hedge my bets on it. So that continues to be a risk. You can have children between now and August continue to transfer, and even then during the year, we could see children leave. Another risk that we have is I know of some people that have fallen in love with Warwick Public Schools. They were sending their children to private schooling, actually someone in our little league that Mr. Wiggins knows as well, and they came out of private schooling and into public schooling. They have an IEP with the full gamut, and so now that's going to obviously drive up the need there even further. Children continue to be screened on a daily basis, so that's going to drive up the need there, and you can't really have a mitigation plan for that. It's just got to be prepared to hire additional special educators and additional TAs if necessary. And so it's a moving target, so it's very difficult for you to budget for something like that. There's a bill going through the House right now in the Senate relative to transportation. Did you come up with a loose figure on what that could possibly be? Was it close to $1 million, possibly? If that Senate bill goes through, which it has some traction, that's another $1 million unplanned. If it takes effect upon passage and hits during the upcoming fiscal year, that's another $1 million unplanned relative to out-of-district, correct? Relative to out-of-district transportation. I could continue to go on and on and on, sir. But when I was just doing loose math prior to the May 6th budget hearing, and then in a back and forth exchange with my main man, Craig Enos, I quickly came up with about $6 million worth of risk that faces this budget today. We actually asked the question on the floor of the assumptions within the budget, what percentage would the budget have to be built to not have those assumptions? And the percentage would be 3.7.
Thank you. That was well done. Actually, I lied. I actually have two more questions. Mostly, this is for Craig.
Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Easy one, which is the additional transportation after audit. One of the risks that was identified was that we wouldn't have that initiative done. What's your confidence level that we'll have that audit done and the number that's there is solid?
50-50 at this point. Not sure, because there are many factors that we really need to take a look at.
Okay. With the audit that you did, I know it was a partial audit. What amounts did you find in that audit?
Because we want to look at the full audit first, but just in the review that we were doing, they were able to show us on a number of the secondary runs, particularly in the afternoon, two students riding a bus that maybe seats 100. Mm-hmm. It was really eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And the first time that we've really been able to track who's riding each bus. So,
but ballpark, if you looked at, if we have 800 runs and this audit did, covered 100 of those, just anecdotally, what do you think could be saved by what you just saw?
I think, by even just what we were looking at, I think we were looking at least $250,000. Mm-hmm. So, the work that RIDE had been doing with other school districts comparable in size, again, millions in savings. Yes. Because no one had really done the work of looking at who was riding the bus. Mm-hmm. And we had people who sign up in the beginning of the year, and that's what we order the buses upon, and then it just doesn't happen.
So the amount that's in the budget here is a conservative number, but yep. could potentially be higher.
Yep.
Okay.
And I will say, you know, we have a transportation manager who has been managing the bus runs for a number of years and does a fantastic job at protecting the interests of the taxpayers. Great. And squeezes every dollar that we can get.
Awesome. One last question. I almost promised that. Just to get a clarification on your breakage number. Breakage number is about $1 million. We have
yes.
We have 38 retiring. We really only need, or the target is to get 38 potentially retired, but it's truly only about 10 at Top Step that gets us to the breakage number.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? You're saying about the number for the breakage. Yeah, I had said that historically when we look at the number of retirees, 35, 38. Mm-hmm. So you've been around there. So far we're up to 12 or 13.
Yeah. So typically mid 30s, but that would be about $3.5 million or greater for
sure.
the breakage.
Yep.
You know, giving that flexibility where some may need to be replaced, whatnot, we're really only looking at 10 solid positions to get to that breakage number in your budget.
We're probably looking at a little bit more than that. So because after when we were talking about the budget, I think Councilman Foley had pointed out, so you had a teacher who maybe retired, but then, you had someone else who maybe had a math certification sitting in their pocket that we weren't aware of. And so that was having a layoff. And so that took
that's the other 28 to yep. do that, the switching. So
yep.
10 clear
yep.
without replacement. So out of those 38. Typically, what have we seen in the past, which was real breakage, typically? I know we're at a really weird retirement bell.
Yeah, right let me get back to you on that. I don't want to speak out of turn
okay.
and provide you an incorrect number.
Okay, but what I'm trying to get at is we don't, because I've seen the eyes, we don't need all 38 to retire and go away.
Right, it would be great, but...
I have one teacher that will do it in a heartbeat if you let her. So, so that's all the questions I have right now.
I have one more thing for Councilman Muto relative to risk, and it's a big one that I can't believe I forgot to mention. It would be insurance copays on property insurance. When I took over as chair in January of 2024, 2 hours after our school committee meeting concluded, the Gorton administrative building flooded. That was my first phone call from then Superintendent Danbrook. 2 weeks went by and the roof at Tollgate was blowing off. Another 4 weeks went by and I got a phone call while trying to be on vacation that there was an electrical fire, resulting in an additional week of vacation for the Tollgate students after the February vacation there. We recently, as you know, we had a giant tree after a microburst this school year go through the annex building roof. Ironically, the only piece of Pilgrim that we were going to keep in the new construction project. That's just our luck. And many other incidents that have occurred, constant pipe breaks due to freezing. And though we've reduced our risk potential through Phase 1 and Phase 2 bond investments at our elementary and some of our secondary schools, there are still some schools that are substantially old and still require investment. But to Councilman Lattiser's point, those Phase 1 and Phase 2 bond dollars are decreasing, and the governor's ADA compliance commission is requiring an investment to some of those properties. So I would say in my 3 years of three years and 5 months of being on the school committee, it is more likely than not that you will have an insurance claim in the upcoming fiscal year and a copayment as a result of that. So another risk that would drive another deficit.
So just a quick follow-up, and I promise, I know I'm probably out of time. Has there, because I know we brought this up all last year, I was a big proponent of it, any discussion on actually getting a capital component?
Yes.
Like an enterprise fund? Above and beyond maintenance of effort?
That's an excellent question. The deficit reduction plan actually called for starting to establish that. And also the deficit reduction plan actually called for initiating a surplus. And we appreciate that the city's administration recognized that when you're deciding whether you keep the electricity on or the water on, you can't really care about your savings account at that point. So as far as a capital investment plan, it's kind of down the road at the moment, because I think we would go in succession of filling our obligation of paying back the city, followed by developing a surplus, followed by developing that capital plan. So.
Thank you, Council President. Just want to make a comment tonight that it's clear to this council person, at least, that the temperature in the room tonight versus where we were 14 months ago, that the heated discussions over budget commissions and mishandling of budgets, and I think that's a testament to the work of this new administration, the work of the new support staff that's been brought in, the work of the school committee, jointly with the administration, and support that you've gotten, you know, throughout the school department as a whole. So I just want to thank you all for the work that was done and participating in what I know was a very difficult, trying time for everyone, including the teachers and the TAs, staff, everyone. So I appreciate that we were up here 14 months ago, and it seems to me, at least, that we are much more collaborative, transparent. I don't think last year we would have had a 2.5-hour conversation that didn't end up in somebody wanting to go outside and throw blows with Chairman Galligan. But here we are. So thank you to everyone in the room, no matter what side of the aisle you're sitting on. I did want to point out just a couple things that I saw with the budget, that it seemed that there were some substantial increases in certain line items in the 5300 block. That was explained to me that those were reallocations. Mr. Enos recognized that they were coded improperly, that ended up coming from other areas in the budget. And it looks like there was actually savings of around $100,000 with those. So again, thank you for that work. The 5600 block, though, I did want to speak about and maybe get some clarity on, specifically textbooks, library books, reference books, books in general. Those items have been substantially cut down, zero allocated to library books, and I know that part of that is, I'm assuming, likely due to technology. The other part is just the unfortunate realization of we don't have the money.
True, and there are many legislative grants that are out there that the schools can approach and get a grant. And many of our schools have very healthy Feinstein funds that they can also use, because that's an extra that they can do to improve the school. Okay. So, yep. Textbooks, yep. So we had left that. We did a decrease on that just due to the technology pieces of it and based upon what has been spent so far for this year. And then finally, you also see that we are responsible for non-public textbooks. So any student that is going to a private or parochial school, we are obligated to provide them with the textbooks that they need. And then depending upon the year and the subject that it is, RIDE will reimburse us a portion of that cost.
Thank you. And one question related to 56101 general supplies. Is that classroom supplies?
Yes, it is. And that also includes, that was a reallocation from our GemsNet science kits that our schools use, that was coded incorrectly in the past, was flagged on our UCOA file. And so we are moving it up into the correct line. So
I'm going to put you in the crosshairs a little bit, so I apologize.
That's okay.
There's an increase of $300,000.
Yep.
Which is necessary, in my opinion. Also, in my opinion, not high enough. Was there any input relative to that line item from teachers that are actually in the classrooms discussing with you or the administration about how much money they expend out of their own pockets year over year for necessary items?
So we spoke to the principals. So there were some increase that were requested. However, we felt, given the other lines that we had, that we wanted to leave that flat. And then once we reallocated the GemsNet science kits, that's what brought it up to the 1.3. To the best of my knowledge, because we've been reviewing every expense that has been requested, we've reviewed everything. You know, other than from what the Budget Commission maybe had said no to a few things, everything else so far for this year has been going on. If there's been a teacher that's been denied something, you know, I'm not aware of that. My wife used to teach kindergarten, so I'm very well aware of the fact that teachers always go above and beyond, and they're buying supplies for their classrooms, and they don't get reimbursed.
What would be the mechanism if a teacher took money out of their pockets to buy papers, pencils, crayons, whatever they need for their classroom, to then approach the school department, school committee, yourself to apply for reimbursement for such items?
Yeah, so something like that, crayons, that would be an essential component to their classroom. They should bring that issue up to the principal and say, you know, if they went through and they used everything that they needed. We want to make sure out of a $200 million budget, I'm sure that we can find $100 to reimburse a teacher for whatever they spent their funds on. So we want to make sure that our students and our teachers are equipped with what they have. So, but they can bring that issue forward to the principal. And if not, then they can bring that, if they don't get the appropriate response, then the executive director of elementary ed. They can bring that up.
Thank you. I think that's all I have from the budgetary standpoint. So I think a couple more of my questions may be for the chairman. Well, I'll take it easy on you, I promise. So I appreciate Mr. Kane's dance around. I know you can't say certain things on the record. I'll say it for you. We need to stop our students from going to North Kingstown to play soccer. So has there been any work from school committee or administration on addressing, instead of, I know the superintendent alluded to a litigation.
Yeah, we're the most unpopular people, Mr. McCaffrey and I, when he goes to the superintendent meetings and when I engage other chairs, nobody's seems to be responding when you sue them. So
have you reached out to any of the state? I mean, it's beyond our control because it's state legislation, right? So has anyone engaged with our state legislatures, or has, to your knowledge, the teachers union stepped behind you at least to support that? Can we change 1645.61 to a way that's more palatable, to either more clearly define in B2 what substantially similar means or what the parameters are, or to 86 that provision altogether?
May I be candid?
Of course.
Really? We need the city council to work with us. We need to partner up as one body. We need the mayor. We need to go in strength in numbers. That's what we need. You know, if you guys can send stuff up through intergovernmental resolutions to the state house, we need you guys to be backing us on that. You know, you guys, I believe all nine of you probably agree that this is wrong. You know, to quote Councilman Lattiser, take them to court. That's what we're doing. So we're doing our part. We're fighting as hard as we can fight, but strength in numbers. So we need, it's got to be a team effort as one city. Warwick pride.
Appreciate that. And I'm assuming that other cities in town are facing similar problems. Yes.
Yeah. The people that are as hurt as us are now starting to speak up. More than 50% of the cities and towns are facing deficits right now because of underfunded or unfunded mandates and people not following the pathways legislation. But I could probably tell you five or six cities that don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, heard. That's all I have.
Thank you, sir.
Candidness.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to restate what I said last night so it's clear. The budget deficit, the deficit reduction plan called for a 2.18% increase in this fiscal year. The school department quickly demonstrated to me that it just was not possible. It would take draconian cuts that would just hurt the school department. So I agreed to appropriate in this budget 2.68%. But also, they're not going to be required to make the $1.1 million payment, which would actually be to us this year. It's not coming out of that appropriation. The city's going to absorb it. It kind of sprained our back, but it didn't break it. And I just want to say that the school department, the school administration worked diligently to cut this budget. They were very creative, and they worked hard at it. And into the future, they're already working on cuts there. Things have changed. This didn't happen under this administration. I trust Bill McCaffrey
He's doing a great job. I get information I never got before. He tells me everything I want to know. He tells me a lot of things I don't want to know. There's been great communication. This is new. This came in with him. He has new staff, and I think the future is going to get a lot easier. I think we can finally start working together, trust each other. So that's why I appropriated this amount, and I'm recommending to the council. I'm hoping that you approve it. Thank you.
Don't get a big head with all that. All right, members of the public, does anyone wish to speak on this? This being the school department budget as proposed. Just keep in mind, try to make sure you're not redundant. So if somebody said something prior, rather than repeating what they said, just say what they said too. That way we can keep things moving smoothly as we have a long night ahead of us. Hello. And make sure when you start speaking, state your name for the record.
What did you say for the public? Oh, that public, that side.
Hello, my name is Kristen Ways, and I'm here tonight as a taxpayer, a voter, and an employee of the city of Warwick. I've worked for Warwick Public Schools for 20 years, and I've sat in these chambers many times supporting funding for our schools. The school department should not be treated as a burden on the taxpayers. We need to invest in our students and in our schools. We cannot give the students of Warwick what they need and deserve without proper funding. I work as a teacher assistant at the Warwick Early Learning Center at JBF, which is John Brown Francis. Because of these budget cuts, the school committee has voted to make drastic reductions to our programs and will be going from 10 full-day programs down to just 3, maybe 4 after the after today, with new information from Mr. Carter provided this evening. 6 of our 18 classrooms will be eliminated, along with 14 of our 31 teacher assistants. Mr. Carter stated 7 teacher assistants being eliminated. However, he's eliminating 14, but putting back in 7 float positions. But those float positions will be used throughout the district. So they're not primarily, they might be called primarily for WELC, but we have major concerns about that filling that gap. I will not take up your time this evening explaining all the complexities of our jobs, but I want to share one example. We have a student in our classroom who has been with us since his 3rd birthday. So he has been with us for all of last year and then this current year. He still has 1 year left to go. I would not hesitate to say that he is our most improved student. Yet the same child has been asked to leave 2 daycare programs in just this school year and is struggling in his 3rd. This is the impact our program has on these children. So this particular student will now only be offered a half-day program. I'm asking you to fully fund Warwick Public Schools so we can continue providing quality education and support, especially for the students and families served by WELC. Warwick Public Schools should be funded with the same commitment and priority as any other essential service in our city. Mr. Ricks, you asked how much it would cost to restore programming at WELC. I was quoted in an email, $900,000. I don't know the numbers. As far as the IEPs being followed going forward, the staff at WELC have significant concerns. The students currently in the full-day programs have IEPs that have 2.5 to 3 service hours. These programs going to half day, adding the planning time, that would reduce the day to less, it's just over 2 hours, I believe. So I don't know how that works out following IEPs. We don't have itinerants, that's why we have that planning time. We don't have art. We don't have phys ed. So, which is when some teachers have their planning time. I'm losing my place. Those particular conversations obviously need to happen with the school department and with Mr. Carter. That is not for, I know you don't decide where the money is spent. We just want to ensure that the programs at Welk are kept at a sufficient, it is so important to keep them for these students. They make such gains in that time period, and the money you spend on the front end of these kids when they're young, you're not going to spend later on. You're going to spend twice as much later on. And we see huge success with our programs. We're also concerned about the community peers. We struggle to get community peers. Going from 5 full-day integrated classrooms down to maybe 1 would really put at risk getting community peers. And community peers are essential to our programs. The IEP students benefit from it, the community peers benefit from it, and it's also a RIDE requirement that we have a certain number of integrated classrooms, so we need those community peers. The numbers also don't make sense to us, going from 5 AAP to 2 and 5 full day to 1 doesn't seem to accommodate the needs of our students. We have rolling enrollment. So as soon as a child turns 3 years old, they are eligible to enroll. We have students enrolling this week, next week, June. They start. If they turn 3, then they start. And I want to thank you for your time and attention. I know there were a lot of questions about Welk, and we appreciate that. It's unimaginable that we're trying to reduce the budget on the backs of the neediest and most vulnerable population. We have a playground party tomorrow that I hope you all got your invitations to, and we hope to see you there. It's a dedication of our new playground and a bench for our former student, Liam Dempsey. So I hope to see you guys there, and I thank you for your time.
Hello, Michelle Comar, Ward 1. Good follow-up with the Welk teacher or teacher assistants, because I attended some of the school committee meetings or listened to Ustream, and I learned quite a bit, especially about the Welk program and how important it is to parents and those students enrolled. And I was going to ask, what was the net savings or reduction in the budget for the reduction in the Welk program? Oh, no, it's okay. The Welk program was reduced. What was the reduction in the budget that resulted?
So we were reducing four teachers and seven TAs, right? So 640, and then 7, so about 1.2.
1.2 million?
Yep.
All right. Do we have students coming in from other districts that go to Welk?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. So this is better as a local school. Do other
yes.
communities have similar programs?
Do other what?
Other municipalities have similar programs?
Yes, they do.
All right. Is it RIDE required or can it be RIDE funded?
So the RIDE required, because once a student is identified through Child Find as having the need, then we have to provide the service, whatever that need is. So that is required in the, and I think I'm saying this correctly, within the half-day model.
Okay. Of preschool.
Of preschool.
Pre-kindergarten.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
Well, that'd be interesting if this is a really important program to look at other funding sources to support, because I heard the parents and I heard the teachers, and really what works is 1 teacher and 2 teaching assistants per classroom. So if we can figure out a way to help out fund that program, That'd be wonderful. But I know you used it to reduce your budget, and I appreciate that as a taxpayer. Couple questions for you. I appreciated your comment. We had a quick discussion after one meeting about the sharing of resources between the municipal side and the school department. I think that would be interesting for everybody to hear.
Sure. So, I think, as much as, we've been working well together, I think very much so over the past year, when we've had to, if we've had a big sinkhole outside of Vet, I make a phone call to Lynn and, her guys are able to do it. They take care of it. Similarly, when there's been plumbing issues happening at the ice rink out back, our plumbers have been doing that. The school department. So you haven't been paying an outside source to come in. We've been able to take care of that. As we've been doing the Munis trainings over the past year, we've been opening up to the city in case there's anyone who wants to have a refresh on a training. So it's been, I think, a really good working relationship. We've been trying to save money wherever we can.
Now, at one time, there was a bulldozer in your budget, I believe, for $10,000. Did that get nixed or?
So the director of facilities, the backhoe, which is from the 1980s, needs to be replaced. And I said, well, we can't put the purchase in the budget, but we did put in the budget the first year payment for a lease, which would give us a lease payment for 3 years. I'm sorry. Yeah, 3 years. And then on that third year, we would have to pay it off. So
I was hoping DPW could help out with that. I'm sure they have all kinds of sizes of buckets and for the needs that you might have and to take that out of your budget totally. That's my wish list. Okay, so I commend all the council people for being here today. Maybe my mind's a little tired and foggy, so I want to check this number. The school budget deficit reduction at the 1.1 million figure is included in the school budget, so it increases their budget because the school department did not pay back the city or pass that to the city. So that's on page 46. On page 47, the next page, and the mayor explained this a little bit, but it's included as a revenue source to the city side. But actually, and I want to get clarification, is it a positive or negative? And if it's into the city budget, and if it's because what it did is it increased the school budget by that amount. And the revenue got decreased by that amount. So is that twice the makeup amount we have to do either on the rainy day fund or by increased taxes? I just can't figure out the math. Thank you.
Hi, Lynn Proger, Finance Director of the city side. So the way that we have budgeted it has been well vetted by the city's audit firm, by the state's auditor general, and then who else? This council is also vetting it. It's a little convoluted. Oh, and the Division of Municipal Finance. So it is well checked. The city side of the budget has an expense side to pay it off. The revenue side is pulling from effectively the city's fund balance. And then in the school financials, a similar entry will happen. The net effect being no change to the maintenance of effort, but the city is, over the course of next year, will be paying off that.
Okay. All right, so I guess reduction. Since taxpayers write one check for their taxes, yes. How does that, because I think it's easier to think about it in this way. That's why I'm saying this.
Yeah.
So is the tax rate increased to cover double that amount now because it was credited as a revenue, but it was also credited as an expense in the budget for the school department?
The fund balance will be paying it off. So there's no effect to the tax rate. There will be a reduction in the fund balance for the city.
There'll be a reduction where, please?
In our fund balance. Everybody likes to call it the rainy day fund. It's the fund balance.
Right, the rainy day fund. How does it reduce the rainy day fund that we need to?
It will reduce it by the $1 million, the 1.1.
And where is that coming from? How's that being paid?
It's not a cash transaction. There's nobody writing a check to pay off an actual debt, per se. We're just using the city's fund balance to pay it off.
So the taxpayers are paying for the budget reduction money that the school department kept to increase their budget. And so I just don't understand how that is counted as revenue on the city side if the school department didn't transfer it over.
Because the use of fund balance is considered revenue in our budget.
Okay, but in reality, because that's all I can deal with, I'm not an accountant. Does this, you said it decreases the rainy day fund, meaning we're going to take money out of the rainy day fund, or?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That makes sense to me now.
Right.
Okay, so this decision is increasing the check that taxpayers write because the school department is using it to increase their budget.
They're not using it to increase their budget.
Well, the number on page 46, department total includes the $1.14
million. It's not increasing their budget. It's not increasing the maintenance of effort. The city is just forgiving that part of the debt.
Okay, what is the total school budget that they're proposing?
$203,874,517.
Okay, so on page 46, that's the top line item, and the $1.14 million is not added. It's added in this table.
Can I walk over there?
You want to look at the table? Sure. This is the handout at the benches out front.
Yeah, so it's over here, right?
The council might want to hear this because they can figure out the numbers better than I can.
Sorry. Jesus. And then it's over here as well. I just want to make sure you actually see it. It's here as well. You see? So it's on page 53 as school deficit reduction. Mm-hmm. And then on the city budget, it is on page 46 as school deficit reduction. They just negate each other.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. So the net result is that taxpayers will be paying more because the school department decided to not refund the $1.14 million, correct?
It doesn't affect the tax rate because it's affecting our rainy day fund.
Well, that's taxpayers' money.
Yeah, yes.
It's still taxpayers' money. Okay. Thank you so much for clearing all that up.
Mm-hmm.
And my final comment is, and I try to learn when I go to meetings, and I'm kind of a fish out of water because I don't have children in the school system, so I try to learn at these meetings of the school committee. And the negativity I heard, and I just want to give credit where credit is due. Warwick taxpayers, the city council, and the mayor all consider kids and their education first. And that is shown through our commitment to fund two new high schools at $350 million that, believe me, will be a strain on our seniors to pay their taxes this year. So please give a rah-rah out to the taxpayers when you can. Thank you.